Welcome to the B2B Influence Spotlight on Industry Game Changers podcast. I'm Paula Keoki, founder and CEO of Outward Media. Outward Media is a trusted data partner to Fortune 2000 businesses and startups alike. We provide the highest quality audience data to fuel engaged, integrated, omnichannel campaigns. Our mission is to deliver real data, real results, and invaluable reach to real people. Welcome, everyone, to the B2B Influence Spotlight on Industry Game Changers podcast. I'm your host, Paula Keoki. And today, we're fortunate enough to have Laura Patterson. She is the president at Vision Edge Marketing out of Austin, Texas. Welcome today, Laura.
Thank you for having me, Paula. I'm excited to be here and be hopefully share some insights that will be valuable to your community.
Oh, I'm sure. I know you will. Laura, you've changed customer centricity throughout your career, from working at Motorola to founding Vision Edge Marketing. What does a truly customer-centric growth strategy look like in today's B2B environment from your perspective?
Yeah, no doubt that we're all trying to figure out how to grow. And I truly believe that if you have a customer-centric growth strategy, which is intentional and purposeful, which is just the opposite of just of random acts and being opportunistic, then you'll be more successful. And what that really truly means is that every decision that you're making in your company, not just marketing, not just sales, but every major decision as a business leader, as an owner, as a member of the C-suite, it's made through the lens of how you're going to deliver measurable customer value. Because if you can deliver customer value, you'll create business value. And it seems so obvious, but it actually is pretty challenging because you have to start by operationalizing customer centricity. So like, for example, I see, and you probably do too, Paula, with the customers that you work with, they all of a sudden they come up with an idea. Let's offer this incentive program for customers, or let's offer this special offer for prospective new customers, which we were not going to offer to our existing customers. So you have these offers that you come up with whenever you come up with them, but they haven't really necessarily been tied to the strategy or thought through what are the implications going to be to the rest of our customer base or to the people that have to serve and deliver that product or to the customer call center or anything like that. So you have to break down those silos to make sure that everybody understands how they're going to create customer value and avoid those random acts.
Well, and I think the bigger the company, that's probably harder to do.
Yeah,
tie them all together. Yeah.
And the more important it is.
One of the things that kind of annoys me is when a company comes out with, we're going to give this all to all the new customers. But what about the customers you've had for, you've been a customer for 10 years, you don't give anything to the existing customer. I always found that a little bit annoying as a customer.
I imagine you're not alone. I find that annoying too. So that's two of us. And I would suspect that people listening to us today would probably agree. They find that annoying. They've been giving loyalty to this organization and all of a sudden, what are they? Chopped liver?
Yeah. Let's just get the new customer. What's this? It's less expensive to keep a customer than it is to get a new one.
That's right. What they think.
Yeah. You've trademarked your circle of traction offering model that outlines four game changers for growth. Which of those do B2B organizations most often overlook? And what are the consequences?
Good. I love this question. So if we think about customer centricity, just for a moment longer, it's going to be really important because circle of attraction is all about being customer centric. As a way of doing business, then everything you do, all your processes, all your outcomes, and all your measures get directly tied to customer outcomes, right? Mm-hmm. Not just internal activity. So the circle of traction talks about measurement all the way through. Like, how are you going to know that you're moving forward, right? The number one area that people often have struggled the most with, whether it's overlooked or just challenged by, is performance measurement and alignment. Mm-hmm. That's where we find the biggest gap. Mm-hmm. And in today's world, it's not a data problem because mm-hmm. I imagine you, like me, have all kinds of data coming our way.
Yeah.
I mean, it's everywhere.
Yeah.
It's being able to get the insights from that data and understand what they actually mean. And if you don't really have a clear framework from the very beginning, right, at the very start, what does success look like from a customer-centric mm-hmm. perspective, then it's going to be hard to know what measures actually matter. So you end up just tracking all kinds of numbers And you end up with this mess, again, mess of random acts of measuring, whether those are campaigns or programs or, and then you're consuming resources, making decisions that have are just based on the numbers, what we would call in the downstream, that aren't really tied to anything in the upstream. And so to answer your question, what's the consequence? You end up with this really reactive culture. That's one of the consequences. And things stall out. Things that, you know, the ball, the as we say here in Texas, since you're coming down soon, you're not moving the ball down the field. So you have to close the gap. You have to be disciplined in your approach. You have to have really good processes, and you really need to be able to select the measures that matter. And we always recommend directly tying your measures to customer value. That's the key thing. Back to my earlier comment. If you create customer value, you'll create business value. And to do that, because companies do struggle, that's why we created our SaaS application, Excellence.
And when you first meet with like a new engagement, do they get that right out of the box, or is this something that is foreign to them and that you're in teaching them about or making it come to the surface?
No, they don't always get it right out of the box because they always will say, we're measuring everything. So two quick stories. I think this
I'd
will
love
help
to hear it.
maybe help. So we were having a conversation with a vice president and CMO, VP of a line of business and a CMO. And they wanted to talk about best practices for in measures and metrics. And after going through a conversation about a measure, a metric, and a KPI, and really getting clarity around what those meant, I said, so based on that, what are you really looking for? So we want to know what are the KPIs that we need to have, and my and what are the metrics that we need to have. And I said, there's no like list. So people think there is a list, or right? There's no list because your KPIs and your metrics and your measures are going to be tied to the outcomes of success for you, and what your outcomes are might be very different than another company. And your strategy for achieving them might be very different than another company. So therefore, it's not like there's a cookie cutter set of measures, which takes me to maybe a second example. So let's say you're bringing a new product to market and you want to know what some of the measures might be. Clearly, one of common measures would be like product adoption rate. You're going to bring a product to market, you want a product adoption rate. And you may be bringing up, you may also want some kind of, maybe you're working through a channel and you might want a channel pickup rate or things like that. Those would be a good category. So you can have categories of measures, but then what, when you think of the product adoption rate, is it just anybody? Or are you looking for a very specific, based on your strategy, a very specific set of customers that you want to adopt that new product? Based on your strategy, you may be going after a particular segment or a particular persona or profile or whatever it might be. And that's really the product adoption rate you care about, not just any product adoption rate. Is that clearer?
I get the feeling though sometimes that maybe they don't, that part of what you do is enlighten them to get there because they're not even thinking about these types of things. I think a lot of companies, they just look at campaigning and ROI in terms of sales results and nothing in between.
That's true. I have a little analogy or a metaphor, I'm not sure which is the right word in this instance. You can help me with that, Paula, that I often use, and I'll repeat it here. Do you play golf?
No, but I know how it works.
Okay, good. I don't play golf either, but I tell people I am married to someone who plays golf, so I have heard a lot of lot about golf for close to 40
I am sure.
years. Anyway, as a side comment, I can't imagine why anybody would want to spend 4 to 6 hours chasing a white ball, but okay.
I feel the same way.
But anyway, so when you go to play a round of golf, you're given a scorecard.
Right.
That scorecard is for that round of golf and for that golf course. It tells you what the par should be by hole, tells you what the slope is, all these
All that.
information, right? And you're then tracking how you're performing against those targets and how you are performing against your competitors if you're playing with others, which my
Correct.
husband loves to play with others, and they do the little gambling thing.
Yeah, of course.
That's very common. So this is a scorecard. That's like setting up a campaign. You set up a campaign for that round, and there you have performance targets, what's really good. You're looking at it from compared to benchmarks against what others have done for similar types of campaigns, maybe what you've done based on the past, that would be your handicap. Exactly right.
Yep, for sure.
But that is not the same thing as a dashboard on your golf game. Sorry.
No
So
worries.
think about it this way. You don't know why you got the score you got when you look at that scorecard. You just see whatever the number of strokes were for that hole. But if you had a performance management dashboard, you would be looking at things like putts per hole,
Yes.
greens in regulation, number of balls in play versus out of bounds, number of balls in traps, right? That would give you an idea of where your problems might be and what you might need to fix. You can't tell that from a scorecard. You can only tell that by the metrics that you set up in your performance management dashboard. And that, I think, when I use this metaphor, do you find that, or example, do you find that's helpful in clarifying the difference?
Yes, and I would think, and with you dealing with the C-suite predominantly, that they totally get that metaphor using the golf. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Okay. So measurement and marketing accountability are central to your work, as we've discussed. Are most organizations still tracking the right KPIs, or are they focused on the wrong metrics? And this is what we were just talking about. But do you see a shift coming that way, or are they still just? Because every time we talk to people, it's just, this is my KPI.
First of all, speaking of marketing doesn't really have, I'm going to go out on a limb here, and I'm
Okay.
sure I'm going to get blasted by some people, but that's okay. Let's have the conversation. I think that's helpful. Marketing doesn't have KPIs. Marketing has metrics. Sales has metrics. The company has KPIs. So you can have measures, and you can have activity kinds of measures that measure things like how many blog posts we did this week, this month, this year, or how many webinars we held. Those would be activity measures, right? How many press releases we put out. And then you could have output measures, things like how many people shared a post, how many people came to our website, how many people registered for a webinar, or how many new qualified opportunities did came from this email campaign, or right, or the open and click-through rate, or some things along those lines. Those are all output measures. Those are measures, they're not metrics. And really, in order to get marketing to the right place with the metrics, they need to know the company's KPIs. For example, is a company KPI customer lifetime value? Is a company KPI the net number of new customers in a particular segment? Is a company KPI time to revenue on a new product? What are the KPIs for the company? And then what does marketing need to do to contribute to that KPI? And what will be the measure that marketing did it? So, changing sports, let's talk football for a moment because you're
Okay.
coming to Texas, and in
It's big
Texas,
in Texas. I used to live
religion.
there. I used to live
Yes,
there.
yes. So, obviously, the ultimate goal, ultimate measure of success in football is getting to the Super Bowl. And there's a whole cascade of measures of success all the way down. But for a game, it's winning the game. That is the goal. Everybody is working towards that. There's no different KPI. The entire team is going for that. But then the person who's responsible for catching the ball, the person responsible for receiving the ball, the person responsible for blocking the offensive line so that the defense, so that you don't have your quarterback getting sacked. These are all indicators or metrics, fumbling all metrics for those positions, just like in a company. All of those metrics are linked to the ability to move the ball down the field and get X number of first downs again and again to get and cross the goal line.
And do you feel that marketing and sales, where do they fit in terms of establishing the metrics and or do they even communicate?
Well, absolutely. Marketing and sales are their partners in the dance. They are working together along with product, along with customer success. They're all working together. They all have to be aligned to win the game. They're all, whether they're one's the quarterback and one's the receiver, and if whatever role they're playing on the field, they're all having to work together. And if they don't work together and they fall apart, then the other team is gonna win. And they have to work together. And the best way to make sure that they are working together is to align around the customer buying journey. And I know that's something that you talk about. So getting the understanding and having clarity around the customer buying journey, who are the customers, who's the ideal customer, who participates in the B2B world. Usually there's multiple people participating in the buying journey. What are the key milestones or steps or touch points along the way, channels along the way, and deciding who owns moving them from one spot to the next, because it's going to be different plays, keeping with our football metaphor, in different places in the buying journey. And some of those will be marketing plays, some of those will be sales plays, some of them will be something else, product plays. And so understanding who on the team and making sure they understand what that might be. So, for example, there may be an online demo early in the journey that people can just do on their own. And then there may be later on an actual product demo. I'm just using this as an example. That's delivered by a technical person and maybe a salesperson. And then maybe later on there's a proof of concept. And those will all have to go together, and they're somewhere on the customer buying journey. I hope that was helpful.
Yes, it is. And because I've read, and I also read recently, Laura, that 72% of the buyers now are millennials, and they really don't want to talk right out of the gate. They want to do their research, get materials, get closer to the decision before they talk to a sales rep. And I think that's been a shift, I don't know, in the last few years. I remember a couple of years ago, it was 55%, now it's 72% of the millennials. So you got to give them what they want when they want it.
Yes, and
In
that
the
means you have to.
buyer journey.
Exactly. That means you got to do really good homework to understand what that is. And you're right. I think it was the corporate executive board that got bought by one of the
Oh
analyst
yeah, I
firms.
forget who it
And
was. Yeah.
I think their research way back when they were doing some research said that 57 that companies are 57% of the way through the buying journey before they engage with the company.
Yeah, that's a big number.
It is a big number. With 57% of the way through. It didn't say how many of them. It's just when you think about the entire buying journey, they're halfway through before they're having a conversation with you.
And then I think the larger the company, the more inclined they're it to be status quo. You have to shake it up to where they don't feel like being status quo is the right thing to do. You know the old saying, nobody gets fired from buying from IBM, right? So,
Yes, I grew
right.
up with that.
Yeah,
Yes.
me too. Me too.
We just dated ourselves.
Yeah, that's all right. It's experience. So today you've advised over 300 companies. Congratulations.
Thank you.
That's a lot of work. What's one trait the most successful ones all share in your opinion?
Yeah, we've been really blessed. I am so grateful to our customers. Vision Edge Marketing, founded in 1999, and we've been through a lot of ups and downs. I know you can relate, business cycles and everything, and 9/11, dot-com bust, recessions, changes in administration and policies. So I am just so grateful to our customers. And I do think they have some things in common. They all have demonstrated intentional discipline and relentless focus on delivering customer value. They get it. I think that is a really delineating factor. They also understand that they have to have the right measures in place, and they may not know what they are. They believe in having real data, not just guessing, and not just going to some AI and asking it, but actually getting real data from their customers, not and from their market, and doing that kind of research as opposed to sticking something into the latest AI tool and trying to get something played out from that. So those are some things they have in common. I think they are really good at collaborating across the organization. The leaders are. They understand that it is teamwork. They do align a lot of their incentives, internal incentives, around customer outcomes. So it's not about what you achieved inside marketing alone, that's an or as sales, but what did you do to, did we win the game? Did we win? They learn, they're good learners, they're fast learners, they are learning organizations. And then lastly, are as passionate as I am about eliminating disconnected initiatives, random acts. Most of our customers are not just floating in a sea of money. I know that I haven't met any of them anyway.
No,
That
I don't know any that are either, so.
if Paula, if you do, will you please
Will
let
I
me know?
point him your way?
So our customers are feeling judicious about their budgets, and they want to allocate their resources accordingly. And they really can't afford just to do a lot. Not that they won't do experiments; they do experiments, but they just can't do random disconnected acts at a whim, because that will get in the way of what they're trying to accomplish.
Yeah, I felt like even in the last few years that tightening up on the budgets and what they're willing to spend money on, what they're not willing to spend money on, has gotten even tighter.
Yes, I feel the same.
So are you incorporating AI into things that you're doing, or what is your opinion on how fast the AI is coming and how it would affect business?
Well, AI's been around a really long time. You and I, we grew up, there was machine learning and AI for a long time. What's exciting and new over the last few years has been this generative AI and what it's enabled everyday people to do. And I use it personally. I'll give you a quick example personally, and then I'll talk a little bit about what it means for businesses. But my mom, who's 88, has fatty liver, but she doesn't drink. And she's not overweight, which are the most common reasons why you would
That's
have fatty
very
liver.
unusual.
Right? Yes, exactly. So we've had a bunch of tests done, and nobody can figure out what's causing it. And it's, you don't want it to go on too long because it can be life-threatening. And so I took all of her prescriptions because she's 88 and she's on a variety of medications, and I put them into Perplexity and said, Perplexity, here are these medications. Which of these have a high propensity for causing fatty liver or liver damage? And again, it went through every single one and did the analysis and sent it back to me. It would have taken me hours and hours
Hours.
to do that. It did it in 5 minutes,
And did you find one?
I identified six of her medications that are known have data connected to liver damage. So now we'll have a conversation about which of those medications can we change out to something that maybe is less, have less damage, right? So we can take action. It's actionable data. Is it, or can we get rid of them altogether? Or what is their purpose? I don't know the purpose, but that is an example of, I think, of how everyday people can use generative AI. Now, I don't know how accurate or exactly right Perplexity is. So we'll go to talk to the doctor, not automatically make decisions on our own and all of a sudden throw those all away. We're going to have a real conversation with a real expert. I think that's, so I want you to keep that in mind as we're talking, as we go next, is that it's important to remember that there is a place for the human being and the expert. Once you use an AI, and I think that's sometimes lost, you think you have the answer and you just go off. When you don't have the answer yet, you have information, and now you can engage in a more meaningful, right? I can have a different kind of conversation with the doctor now than I probably would have had if I didn't wasn't armed with that information. AI and automation, and they're not necessarily the same thing because I didn't automate anything in this example, but I definitely used AI. But we can also use AI to automate workflows. They enable us to execute customer-centric strategies at scale and with greater precision. So there is real merit to them. And we don't use AI for any customer work, but we do use AI for our work. For example, let's say we want to do social media posts. We have written all the content. I write all our content. We do not outsource that, and we don't let AIs write it either. We write our content. But what's the harm after we've already written it? Of putting it in an AI that says, and say, can you give me a quick summary of each of these articles and make a recommendation for a social media post for Twitter or a long form post for LinkedIn? They're going to just take the content we generated and put a summary or something together, and it's going to do that in minutes.
In
It'll
minutes.
take me or someone on my team much more than a few minutes.
For sure.
So that is an example, and I think that's critical. So AI can be really helpful in identifying patterns, helping to look at some of the data, enable some personalization. But you have to remember to be careful because it will give you what you want. It will be an echo chamber. It will come back with confirmation bias. And it is not, it isn't going to necessarily give you the right tool. Here's an example. We had a customer come to us, wanted to do a customer survey. And we started going through what it would take to do a customer survey. And so they came back and said, we're just going to have ChatGPT make our survey. I said, ChatGPT, does it know what to ask you in order to get the survey properly created? Not that ChatGPT can't put in a bunch of, create a bunch of questions, but we have a whole methodology around how to make sure that you're creating a survey that's going to get you what you want. But they went off and they did it. And then they came back. Probably was about 6 weeks later and said, maybe we do need some help with the survey construction.
Did they actually use it? Did they actually use it and put it out there?
I don't know what they did. I didn't ask. I don't know. And I didn't want to put anybody on the spot. I said, sure, happy to help. happened. When we went through our methodology, we created the survey, we gave it to them, we went through the iterative process, and we actually fielded the survey for them, and they got very good information back. And then
What
it
they
came
wanted.
time to analyze that data. And they said, we're just going to put that data in our in the AI, let it analyze the data and tell us what it means. And I said, great, but it might be able to do that. Again, if you know what you're doing with the AI, it might be able to do that. Lo and behold, about 3 weeks later, maybe we have a few more questions about what some of this might be. So I'm not saying you shouldn't use AI.
I totally agree with you. We use it, but there's also got to be the human element involved with it as well.
Yes, an expert. That goes back to my point about we're going to meet with the doctor and have a real conversation. So there is a role for the human expert. There's a role for the human expertise and experience and things along those lines. So it's not a magic solution, but certainly it can help us do things faster and
Faster.
with precision.
Faster.
And for that, I am grateful.
Yeah, me too. But again, the authenticity and the human interactions, I think, is really important. Last thing I'm going to ask you today. If you could invest unlimited resources into one area of B2B marketing right now, what it would be and why?
I'd invest in building the discipline, the routines, the processes, and the team structures that enable and operationalize customer centricity. Because a lot of people talk the talk, but they don't know how to walk the walk. Connecting strategy, execution, and measurement, getting the right cross-functional team set up, designing really clear measures and metrics tied to customer outcomes, and then figuring out how you can automate some of that to aid the execution. I think that way is going to, that is something, again, everyone is saying, oh, we're customer centric. When we started in 1999, customer centricity was like deer in the headlights. Now everybody and their brother, uncle, sister, cousin talks about customer centricity, but they don't necessarily know how to operationalize it. So operationalizing, and I'm really passionate about that and really helping companies figure out how to do that well. And to make sure that they also didn't get stuck in a quagmire of doing it in a random way that ends up stealing their strategic capacity, costing them a lot more money and time.
Laura, you've been very enlightening today, and it's very obvious you're passionate about what you do. If anybody would like to get a hold of you to have a chat, what's the best way to get a hold of you?
They can reach out to me by email at laurap@visionedgemarketing.com or find me on LinkedIn. And I would be happy to have a conversation with anyone. And I'd be even happy to hear anyone's altered or alternative point of view. Why not? Let's have a conversation.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Laura.
My pleasure.
Hi, I'm Paula Keoki, and thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, share it on social media, and don't forget to rate or review the podcast wherever you listen. Your feedback helps us grow and inspire others. If you're a successful business leader or marketing professional with insights to share, we'd love to feature you as a guest. Visit outwardmedia.com/podcast to learn more. Make sure to subscribe so you never miss an episode, and connect with us on social media to join the conversation. Visit outwardmedia.com to explore how we can help take your strategic audience building to the next level. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you next time.